With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
History isn't just a bunch of names and dates and facts. It's the collection of all the stories throughout human history that explain how and why we got here. Welcome to the History Unplugged podcast, where we look at the forgotten, neglected, strange, and even counterfactual stories that made our world what it is. I'm your host, Scott Rank. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here this morning.
Yeah, me too. You have researched this subject. You have taught on Reconstruction and education for African Americans for a very long time. And we have a lot to discuss, but one thing I'm curious about to start out with is when you've talked about the subject of education for Black Americans and Reconstruction in the early 20th century, what's something that you think has surprised students and others the most when you presented a fact or something that they didn't expect? What do you think that's been in your experience?
Well, the initial shock was my 1982 thesis, where I disproved that the school was founded in 1874. Hmm. Instead, it was founded in 1867, immediately after the Civil War. That's the first shock. And the second shock would be the 9 former enslaved men who incorporated the school on July 18, 1867. Those are some of the shocks. Many laypersons basically do not understand the Reconstruction era and the nadir that occurred after 1876. And of course, through the book, I bring you up through that time period, through the legalization of Jim Crow, and all the way to the school became a post-secondary institution. So the journey, though, mirrors that of African-Americans in Alabama and the South. And it was a tough journey, but through determination, the school was able to survive and become a major HBCU, a historical Black college and university. And today it is proudly located here in Montgomery and continue to turn out graduates that contribute to the state, the city, and the country and the world, because they've touched many things, particularly in the 20th century. The role in the civil rights movement stands out, but it's all coming from the previous years of struggle that would push them into leading the civil rights movement. Scott, I tend to ramble, so you bring me back when you need.
So do I. So you're in very good company right here. I would love to know the Marion Nine, the nine men who start the school. What I wonder is, how on earth do they do this? Because in American history, we talk about people pulling themselves up by their bootstraps. immigrants coming to Ellis Island in the 1920s who only have possessions on their backs. But this is a completely different level. These are men who were previously enslaved, who had to go from the lowest possible position and go to the point where they're helping to begin a school. I mean, that is a tremendous gap. So who are they? And can you take us from the beginning of their story up to 1867?
Mm-hmm. Well, the town of Marion, which is located in the heart of the Alabama Black Belt, was the cultural and religious and educational center of the state during the Antebellum period. And of course, tremendous amount of wealth, which was built on the staple cotton and the enslavement of Black people to harvest the to grow and harvest the cotton. So these institutions are there. And many of the white slaveholders are so-called Christians. And they felt the need to educate their slaves, believe it or not. Andrew Billingsley, a native American and a sociologist, said that it was the area that created these slaves that came out. I think you look at the incorporation paper, the ones that signed their names, six of the nine could read and write, which is highly unusual in the South. And I believe it was the religion that allowed these six of the nine men to learn to read and write, to read the Bible and participate in church service. But before in Marion, at the end of the Civil War, Black leaders met in Mobile and decided that education would be the means for the advancement of these newly emancipated freemen. And so the seed was planted, just like today. If you want to advance in society, you have to become educated. And so it's no different in 1866 and 1867. The desire to advance is what's through education. And these nine Black men recognize the value of an education. And it really played out, because when you get to the 20th century, Horace Mann Bond, History of Negro Education in Alabama, he pulled up something. This area of Perry County had the highest percentage of Black PhDs in the country. And he wanted to know why. And it all goes back to this school.
Huh.
And wow. It's unbelievable, the legacy of the Lincoln School, the Lincoln Normal School, State Normal School. After the school is moved to Montgomery, the school was revised and continued to exist until 1969, when it was closed for integration purpose. But the school continued to exist in Marion. The college moved to Montgomery, but the school continued to exist in Marion. And it was a quite a successful venture.
Hmm.
I hope someone, you're not getting that phone, but.
Yeah, it's that's in almost all the interviews that I had, there's kids in the background. There's different lockdown. Just it changes the game for everyone. I've had a little bit of that too with my kids running around.
But it's the foresightedness of the these nine Black men that led to the creation of the school, and of course the dividends are immense, as documented through many studies and people who've looked at that area. A friend of mine has a new book out, published by the University of Alabama Press, just on Perry County alone. As you know, if you know anything about civil rights, the Black Belt and the Mississippi Delta was at the heart of the foot soldiers, the people on the ground. And so Marion not only is a lead in education, but also in all the cultural, political situation. The origin of the 7th of Montgomery March starts in Marion, believe it or not, with the killing of Jimmie Lee Jackson in a cafe, trying to protect his mother. They brought him to Selma where he died. And then that's when the idea of marching to Montgomery, Selma to Montgomery March came up in 1965. So the location of this area is unique is the word I would put there.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, it's an invisible hand. It's these seeds that are planted 100 years later, having all this.
Yes.
So I a while ago, I read the biography. I think it was Booker T. Washington, and he grew up as a slave and then was emancipated when he was a child. And in his book, he talks about, at first, there's incredible excitement on the plantation when the Union Army is coming down and they know they hear the Emancipation Proclamation. But then after that, he described it as the next day, people wonder, what on earth do we do? Where do we go? And
yes.
the Marion Nine, from Emancipation, before we started the interview, you'd mentioned organizations like the Freedmen Bureau, the American Missionary Association. How do they go from Emancipation to starting a school in 2 years? That's just mind-boggling. How did they do that?
Well, remember I was telling you about six of the nine to write,
read and write.
They were looking for help, petitioning the Freedmen Bureau and the benevolent society like the American Missionary Association, which got started with the Armistead case. If you're familiar with that, the slaves attempting to sail back to Africa killed the captain. And I think they was captured in Newport, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. So the American Missionary Association grew out of activism and was major players in the abolition movement. And as the Union Army came through the South, they followed behind them. In Alabama, they founded their first school up in Athens, Alabama in 1865. So they saw education and religion as joined at the at the ankles. They're joined together. You couldn't be religious and be unless you was educated. That's the Congregationalist viewpoint at that time. So they're starting churches as well as schools, but the schools are the has the most impact because it was interdenomination. You didn't have to be a Congregationalist to attend that school. So most of the population in Marion would be Baptist. Because of the large Baptist contingent. You also had Siloam Baptist Church, where the Alabama Plan was articulated in 1844 that split the Baptists and Southern Baptists away from the National Baptists before the Civil War over the issue of slavery. You also had Howard College, which started there in 1841. And in 1887, moved to Birmingham, and today there's Samford University. You also had Judson College, a female Baptist college, and then you had, that was another academy there. So school for whites were far advanced in this town. And if I'm assuming that these nine men are looking around and they see how their white compatriots was advancing through education, and this was also a driving force in the creation of the Lincoln School.
What were the early years of the Lincoln Normal School like?
From 1867, it's a private school. In 1869, during the Reconstruction period, where the State Board of Education was created, and the public school system was relaunched in Alabama. In 1869, it becomes a normal school. Are you familiar with the concept of normal schools?
Sort of, but it changes over time. How would you define it?
The concept grew out of Germany, I think, in the 1830s, and was brought to the Americas to deal with the pervasiveness of illiteracy. And so these normal schools were established to develop teachers to teach in the common school or the elementary school provide a basic education. So after the Civil War, the same tendency was applied to your black schools. We're living, you see, during the Reconstruction period, the decision to segregate schools would be made, and they needed black teachers to teach in the black schools. And this is what led to the development of Alabama State, Alabama A&M, Talladega, Tuskegee, all of your HBCUs. Most or many started as normal schools. And basically the concept was 4 years beyond elementary school. In the 19th century, to get a secondary education, you had to attend a black normal school. It's unbelievable. It's not until the progressive era of the early 1900s where we start discussing a post-secondary education for black. So you could graduate from State Normal or Lincoln with a teacher certificate, but to get a bachelor, you would have to go out of state to another school. An example would be John William Beverly, who was the first black president. He graduated from the college division at Marion in 1882, but he doesn't get his degree until he attends Brown University in 1890 and graduate with a bachelor's degree in philosophy in 1894. So that gives you an idea of what, and also what they're fighting against. And this Booker T. Washington, William Burns Patterson, and William Hooper Council in particular, the white former slave owners, the people in charge, did not believe blacks were capable of learning, achieving higher standards. Now, previously, before I wrote this book, I co-authored the Illustrated History of the Tuskegee Airmen. You know the Airmen story.
Yeah, I had one on my show. It was one of the greatest privileges I had. It was great.
Yeah, but the same concept with the 1925 War Department study was that blacks could not perform complex tasks, and they could only be in service, battalions, truck driving. They could not fly complex machines. Well, the airmen proved them wrong, but in the during the Reconstruction period and all the way up, blacks are having to prove their worthiness to be educated, that they can learn, even though you're producing doctors and lawyers at Mehara and Howard University. The concept among the lay white conservatives is that blacks were only good to plow a mule and harvest the crops. And they did not support this effort to educate them. They was not funded, as well as the white institutions. You can look at the outcome of the Knight versus State of Alabama, the 1990 federal court case, to verify that. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. I'm just amazed at the school because it must have had incredible growing pains, because you're serving a population that was denied access to education for a long time. So the school has to evolve, like you described, going from a normal school, and then over the time it can add its curriculum, then grow into a university. And it's like they had to fly the plane before the plane was completely built, and they're building the plane as it's in the air. And can you talk about that process, how the school evolves when it...
Hey everyone, Scott here. We're going to take a very short break for a word from our sponsors.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, again, the having to prove that worthiness and going against the people in power after 1874 in particular, and the fight during the Reconstruction period, the Klan activity, the it's a brutal period. Mm-hmm. The former slaveholders did not accept the loss of their servant class. And the economy was based upon agricultural. They needed field hands and workers. They didn't need educated students. Mm-hmm. So, and then, of course, the end of Reconstruction, the Bourbon Democrats coming back to power. It is a journey throughout where they fight for the right to be educated. And they just, most was done, what I found in the book, within the Black community. The state was a pittance as far as funding compared to the University of Alabama and Auburn University. It was the Black community that rallied around the school and did not allow it to fail. And it's a fascinating story. When they get here to Montgomery in particular, lawsuits, 3 years without funding. One of the instructors and a graduate of the school there in 1890 said it was a time to pray and pay. And your Black churches and your Black organization, everybody chipped in to keep the school open. And eventually they got funding from the state again. And by 1920, they've gone through this progressive movement where whites high schools are established in each county of Alabama, 1907. And through the Slater and the Rosenwald Fund, the concept of developing training schools. These are Black high schools, but they're called training schools with vocational slant. The Slater Fund would desert the school, and then the public system would take them over. I myself attended a training school, the Autauga County Training School. Even though they had a high school across town, but it was segregated. Blacks went to the training school. So you got this fight for education, a continuous fight that still goes on today, and funding for this education. Montgomery County recently passed a referendum to increase millage property taxes. Alabama has the lowest property taxes in the nation. The last time a millage rate was passed was in 1967. And of course, you know what happened in 1969 and 1970s. The schools were forced to integrate. Well, here in Montgomery, the county elected after it must have been at least 3-4 referendums in the last 30 years, all went down without a vote. But as the city transitioned demographically, more whites moved out. This time, the referendum passed. So the again, the dual system really hurt education in the state, and it hurt the people that they helped to serve. And it came out of the Reconstruction period, and once it was forced to end in 1969 and 70, that's really when the schools was integrated. Whites deserted the schools, went to segregation academies, moved out of the community. So we're still struggling to educate the Black youth of the state.
Okay, so here's a question. This reveals my ignorance, but listeners are well acquainted with that by this point. In the North, HBCUs, were there many before the Civil War? So I was trying to think Howard. I don't know what.
Well,
was Howard before the Civil War when it was founded?
It's after.
It's after. Okay.
Yeah, the head of the Freedmen Bureau. It's named after him. Howard. Yeah, but you did. Yes. Up in Pennsylvania, you had Cheney College, and in Ohio, you had Wilberforce. Those are the two that I can think of. Those are pre-Civil War HBCUs.
So I was curious. It sounds like Southern HBCUs are having to be built, basically out of nothing. Was there much interaction between Northern and Southern HBCUs, or were Southern HBCUs mostly developed on their own?
I'm sure it was. But I tried to stay, one of my old history instructors told me about staying on target. And I just focused on Alabama State and mainly its Benevolent Society, the American Missionary Association. You had the Baptist, the Black Baptist, the National Baptist Convention started here in Montgomery in 1867. They had Selma University. The Presbyterian had Stillman College in Tuscaloosa. And of course, the congregation had Talladega in Talladega. And the Seventh-day Adventists, believe it or not, are involved, I know, in the 1890s with Oakwood College up in Huntsville. So you did have other religious entities involved in the expansion of Negro education in the state of Alabama. But I mainly focused on the American Missionary Association, the Freedmen Bureau, and those nine Black men.
Yeah, what you just said there, right? That's a big mistake is they try to basically write about the entire universe and like, nope, you got to choose your topic and just don't, you know, don't get pulled away. So could you describe what would a student be like who enters ASU, let's say at some point in Reconstruction, what would be the background of a student who enters, and what types of things would they study, and then what would they go off and do after they graduated?
Well, believe it or not, we're seeing the development of a Black middle class. It costs money, even though it was state-supported. Yes, you still had to pay tuition. So it was limited to who could attend, unless you got the help of the Benevolent Society or church that was sending them. So it was not available to all Black Alabamians. Basically, school was created to educate the people there in Marion and the surrounding communities. Later, under William Byrne Patterson, it was expanded to take in the whole state. And of course, he was successful in building this school. Tremendous accomplishment. The other thing I want to point out to you is that it is one of the earliest HBCUs to provide teacher training. Remember, we was talking about the normal school? This is 1869. And of course, once the Bourbons came in, then once the state is redeemed by the Bourbon Democrats, the money was cut and the school will struggle all the way up until we get to the progressive governors of Alabama, Brandon, O'Neill, and Kilby. And of course, Bibb Graves, which expanded the school to a four-year institution and expanded the campus built dorms, administrated. He's controversial because he was a Klansman. Sort of like Hugo Black. Him and Hugo Black were selected the same year in 1926. Hugo Black to the Senate, and he became governor. So you have white liberals also playing a role in the expansion of Negro education, even though they were advocate of white supremacy. There's no other way to shake it. But they would lead, go on and lead great lives, like I was telling you about Bill Gray, ended the convict lease system, improved the roads. His great expansion was in education. You got buildings named for him all over the state, Alabama, Auburn, Troy. And then, of course, Hugo Black become a Supreme Court justice. And I think he is the major author on the Brown versus Board of Education in 1954. He, even though he was a Klansman, but during the 1920s, after the founding of the second Klan, he, the Klan, in order to win a statewide election, you had to be in good standing with the Klan. And that's the situation with Hugo Black and Bill Gray. But Black leaders was forced, just like we talked about Booker T. Washington, William Hooper Council, they went in the industrial education, the vocational training, which was agreed to. They accommodated white supremacy. William Byrne Patterson, by the way, was an advocate for a liberal arts education and not industrial education. That's what separates the three institutions here in Alabama. It's the, as you know, you're familiar with the fight between W.B. Du Bois and Booker T. Washington. All of this is incorporated into this effort to educate Black students here in Alabama and the South.
And for listeners who don't know about that, could you just touch on that briefly? Because that the Booker T. Washington, W.B. Du Bois, different approaches. If you could touch on that, that'd be great.
Booker T. Washington basically addressed it in the Atlanta Compromise speech, 1895, 96. And he lay down your bootstraps right here, lift yourself up by your own bootstraps, basically. Du Bois, having founded the Niagara Movement and later the NAACP, and a well-educated Northerner at that time, he was a little more liberal, more of an activist. He confronted white supremacy. And he disagreed with Booker T. Washington and his way to achieve. Of course, looking back on their advocacy, both were correct. There was no right way or wrong way in this argument. But his Washington and council here in Alabama was put forth a program that was more appealing to the white conservatives. So that is the difference. But that battle in the 1890s, the turn of the century between Du Bois and Washington is worth reading about. The Soul of Black Folks, Booker T. Washington, Up from Freedom, his book, his biography, that goes in detail. And here, white Patterson, a white man, leading the Black school, he's teaching Latin, Hebrew, Greek, the liberal arts, and at Tuskegee and Alabama A&M, they're also providing a classical education because they're normal schools. They're producing teachers. But Council and Washington become leader in the industrial movement. And of course, Washington builds a great university. He's not depending on the state of Alabama, he went to the Northern philanthropists like Carnegie, the Rockefellers, and built a great college institute that known as Tuskegee University today. Alabama A&M became the land grant in 1890, the Second Morrill Land Act. And these three schools competed for this. There's a battle going on, but Alabama A&M became the land grant. in 1896, Washington hires George Washington Carver, and it becomes an experiment station. Many people would argue that Alabama is the only state in the nation that has three land-grant colleges, Alabama A&M, Auburn University, and Tuskegee University.
Yeah, I'm an alumnus of Iowa State University, and that's where George Washington Carver.
Oh, you know the story then.
Oh yeah, he got his PhD. The math building's named Carver. That's a whole episode itself of George Washington Carver.
Right.
But could you just touch on him of the education that he received there, and then what that allowed him?
Well, Washington genius by hiring him away, bringing him to Tuskegee is brilliant. And of course, Dr. Carver was such a unique man. He was more concerned with his work than making money. He turned down opportunity to go to work for the DuPont, the Ford, and just stay there at Tuskegee. If you haven't visited the George Washington Carver Museum, I highly recommend it. The products that he worked with and the genius, really. He's a genius. Mm-hmm. But he was so calm and deliberate. And it went right along with the mission and the vision that Booker T. Washington had established for the school. And Carver just fit right in. And what a wonderful story to go into.
Yeah, I mean, how many hundreds or thousands of products did he develop out of peanuts? It's
and sweet potato.
Yeah. I mean, for agriculture at the time to feed a growing population, he's like the guy in the 20th century, Norman Borlaug, who developed drought resistant crops and basically saved Mexico and Pakistan and other places from starvation. I mean, George Washington Carver, that's what he was 100 years earlier.
Other thing, Scott, I would like to point out to you, if you're familiar with the migration of Blacks from the South to the North, Carver, a lesson that impact, even though the coming of World War One, the working in the war machinery shops, the automobile industry, it changed the population of cities like Detroit, Cleveland, Chicago, Pittsburgh. And this is the way, but Carver, by battling the boll weevil and giving people instruction on farming, lessened the migration pattern to the north. Now, in the 1970s, we have a reversal of Blacks moving away from northern cities back to Sunbelt cities like Atlanta. Yeah, the election is a good example. That's the migration back to the South, Charlotte, Orlando, Dallas, Houston. So you got migration in the turn of the century to the North. Near the end of the century, the migration is coming back to the South. But Carver is instrumental, not only for those Black farmers, but also the white farmers in surviving. And of course, this is with the Depression coming along, hard times.
Hey everyone, Scott here. One more brief word from our sponsors.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Calitrin. Text the word UNPLUG to 30605, and I'll send you a link to a wonderful product that can help you finally succeed in shedding that extra weight. I took Calitrin for several weeks last year, and I felt great in several ways. I felt stronger, my workouts felt easier, I slept better, I was noticeably trimmer, there was no downside. Text the word UNPLUG to 30605 right now to see this week's special offer on Calitrin. Calitrin contains collagen, the most abundant protein naturally occurring in the human body, which decreases as we age. Taking Calitrin promotes better sleep, more energy, less joint pain, and best of all, weight loss. Calitrin has an 86% success rate with their 90-day supply, and this week, take advantage of my special offer. Buy the 90-day supply and get an extra month free, plus free shipping. Ordering is easy. Just text the word UNPLUG to 30605, and I'll send you a link to the special offer. Again, text UNPLUGGED to 30605.
They were some of the most powerful men who've ever lived. They waged war, forged peace, and altered the fates of billions of people. And yet, they were just as human, just as flawed as you and me. They were the presidents of the United States, and they are the subjects of the history podcast, This American President. In each episode of This American President, we explore how flawed men have managed this awesome responsibility. To listen now, go to ParthenonPodcast.com or search This American President on your favorite podcast platform.
Yeah, I mean, for he could very well, the work he did was the difference between a decade and a half of economic depression versus a decade and a half of depression and starvation, which, I mean, famines were the name of the game back then all across the world. So,
yes. What a wonderful story. I mean, we can't talk enough about Carver. But let's get back to Alabama State. Alabama State, William Byrne Patterson, initially when the school was being located here in Montgomery, Booker T. Washington opposed it. He thought that the school would compete with his school, which is 35 miles away. And he was under the impression that the school was going to go to Birmingham, but the Alabama White Baptists outfoxed Washington. Instead of state norm of going to Birmingham, it ends up in Montgomery, close to Tuskegee. The Baptists relocate Howard College then to Eastlake, Birmingham, and it becomes Samford University. Marion lost two institutions in 1887. Montgomery gained one, and so does Birmingham, the Magic City, which has just grown up during the Reconstruction period. From ashes, it becomes the head of the mineral belt here in Alabama. Again, we're talking about migration. During the Reconstruction period, blacks are leaving the plantation and going to work in mines and other areas in Birmingham, all throughout the mineral belt of Alabama, leaving the plantation, leaving the fields to work in mines and iron mills and steel mills. This is Birmingham, so it is growing. And so both cities competed for Alabama State and Samford. The Baptists winning out with Samford University going to Birmingham and State Normal coming to Montgomery. But State Normal runs in trouble because the law that created it, the Colored People University, is declared unconstitutional because they were drawing funds from the Common School Fund. That's what led to the 3 years without any funding from the state. The time to pay and pray, as Mary Frances Terrell would call it. ask me another question.
Okay. Well, I'd like to return to something you said at the beginning of our talk, that they it was found that the highest concentration of black PhDs in America, ASU caused that from where it was geographically. Alumni of ASU, they were overwhelmed. They were disproportionately present in the civil rights movement. So from when the seeds were planted in the 1860s until as late as 100 years later, and even today, it's because of ASU. So could you describe that process of how did it do that? What were the decades of cumulative effects? Was it many of the teachers and HBCUs and high schools came from here, or was it something else? Or what do you think explains that process?
Well, I was talking to you earlier about the American Missionary Association, the Freeman Bureau. It fosters learning and activism. And also you have to tie the black church in with this institution because these the leaders are all in the pulpit of your black churches, no different than the Reconstruction period as the Civil Rights era. And the spirituality of the church and the belief system that had been adopted by these Africans gave them the solace, the peace to challenge and to pursue and to persevere against all types of obstacles thrown in their way. So it's spirituality, education, the community itself would not allow institutions like Alabama State to fail. And the churches, major contributors during those 3 years of the existence of non-funding by the state. Also, the money to buy the property, to expand the campus, all of that is community, not just students, just people, black communities, because remember what I told you, you have a sizable black middle class developing as the school develops, and they are giving money back to support these institutions like Alabama State. They could beg and plead with the white legislators, and they could decide what type of education, how much money would give. But the community itself went in a different direction. They understood the value of an education. They understood the contribution of an educated population. Even the behavior of the citizens, the crime rate, all of that is based upon the level of education within those communities. So they were totally tied together, both in Marion and in Montgomery. During lean times, bad times, the Depression is a good example. We'll talk about that later, where the president allows students to go with in-kind contribution, a side of a ham, corn, unbelievable. The Bama State Collegian, modeled after the Fisk Jubilee Singers. Remember, they went to Europe and entertained Queen Victoria. Mm-hmm. The Bama State Collegian went on tour and brought money back to keep the school open during the Great Depression. The football game between Tuskegee and Alabama State, the teachers and staff could not get paid until at the end of the game every Thanksgiving. This was during the 30s. I know I'm moving all around.
Right, but it's a big story.
But it's the community itself that pulls together, that allows the Lincoln School in Marion, the Lincoln Normal School, State Normal, Alabama State Teachers College, and Alabama State University to survive. And the same thing, I listened to the president, Quinn Ross, who wrote the foreword to the book. He called it community diversity. Mm-hmm. The community and the university are bound at the hip. And I don't know any a way to say it other than that. So now with integration, it costs the school to lose students. To now you can go to Auburn, you can go to Alabama. But I foresee right now, understand, there's a movement of these former black students that once went to Alabama will return and go to Alabama State, Tuskegee, Alabama A&M, Talladega, the HBCUs. That's a new emphasis now on HBCUs. It may have come from the Black Lives Matter movement, but they are going, I don't know how to explain it, Scott. Randall William and I have had this discussion about this book and how timely it was, because people are going back and looking at the heritage of these Black institutions and trying to keep them alive and viable during this tough time we're living in today.
One question before we wrap these things up together. You mentioned earlier that there were leaders of these colleges, presidents who are working with the Alabama government and legislature at a time, let's say the 1920s, when the Klan was at the height of its power. There were millions of members in the United States. Birth of a Nation is shown at the Wilson White House.
Yes.
And it's just like white supremacy. I mean, we're not speaking euphemistically. It's what it was. This was the political structure at the time. This is pre-Dixiecrat, whatever. But leaders of these colleges had to work with these politicians and others to keep their university surviving. They had to have state support. And I think for a modern listener, I think a lot of people, they think how it's hard to wrap their minds around. So how did they successfully navigate this? And like, is the best, like you said, one of the leaders in Alabama later sat on the Supreme Court and passed Brown versus Board of Education. And they thought, well, if we fund these schools, we're keeping the separate and the separative equal equation. Or how did this all work?
Well, the model was set in the 19th century by Patterson, Washington, and Council. And we've already talked about Washington, but William Hoover Council is another example of accommodated white supremacy. They recognized it, and they paid homage to it. We can't find anything on record on Patterson, his role in the Constitution, and but he was your classic white paternalist. Not classic, because he's unique during this time period. But they use the model that Washington, Patterson, and Council used to navigate, particularly George Washington Trenton and Harper Council Trenton. They realized Bill Graves was a Klansman, but they knew to advance the school, they needed his support. And it's no different than what Patterson, Washington, and Council learned in the 19th century. The same lesson applies in the 20th century. Unbelievable.
Right. Yeah.
The people that passed voted on the abstinence school in 1874 as a state university, they were white supremacists.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, I mean, there's a lot. There's so much more to the story, but with ASU and other Alabama colleges, based on everything you've seen, what do you think is the biggest legacy that they leave behind?
Well, survivability is to me, because I go in depth, and the question of survival at Tuskegee, A&M, and Marion and Montgomery, those are the big questions. And the perseverance of the institution and their supporters, stakeholders, goes back to those 9 black men. There were some that opposed the education of blacks, and if they would be educated, they should be controlled by Southern whites. These 9 black men refused to accept that offer and went with the American Missionary Association and Freedom Bureau because they did not want to get and trust their well-being to their former enslavers. It's no different. You learn to work and live and navigate this white supremacist society that they were living in. And you make gradual changes. Some of the leaders like Charles Harris and Fred Gray, the change will come from the nurturing of these black students at these institutions. And that's where the change occurs. And that was the role of your HBCUs and Alabama State, to nurture the student, to get them to believe that they could do better, that they could change the world that they were living in. And I would say it was quite successful at that particular time.
So, yeah, absolutely.
The 20th century leaders used the 19th century model established by Washington Council and Patterson to be successful. That's saying a mouthful. Even though the time changes, that strain of white supremacy or white nationalists continued to exist throughout the 19th, 20th, and even into the 21st century. We see strains of white nationalism in our political interactions.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I mean, there's a lot to this story, and we couldn't possibly get to all of it. And for listeners who want to check out more, the name of the book is From Marion to Montgomery, The Early Years of Alabama State University, 1867 to 1925. And if you're watching on video, there it is right there. Always great to have a visual, so yeah, have on hand. Well, I really appreciate you sharing all this with us. Mr. Caver, thank you for joining us.
Anytime I can help you, give me a call. I'll be happy to talk to you, Scott. Enjoy the interview.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
There we go. That wraps up everything for today's episode. First off, I'd like to thank History Unplugged's Spy Masters, which you can easily become, and I'll explain what that is after listing them off. They are, in no particular order, Baron Fraser, Chrissy, David Santee, Josh from VFW Post 2285, Jake Harrington, Josh Reddick, Jeff Mitchell, owner of Mountain West Commercial Las Vegas, Michael from New York, Michael Piccinetti, Nick Brooks, Rob from Chicago, Salvador Sanchez, Tom from Ohio, Moondoggy from Ohio, Bill Ivey, Bruce Ashby from Wire Meets Wood Guitars, WMWGuitars.com, Los, Sergeant Hooch, Sumo 41, and Willie from New Jersey. Now, having thanked my spy masters, I'd like to mention some ways you can get more involved with what I'm doing with History Unplugged. First, if you want to comment on the most recent episodes, you can check out the History Unplugged Facebook or YouTube page, which are video recordings of all the episodes, and they often come out before the audio episodes do. Second, please like and subscribe to the show on the podcast player of your choice. This helps the show grow and find new listeners. Finally, the best way you can get involved is to join History Unplugged's membership program called the Dalton's Rangers. This is the place where you can directly partner with me when it comes to the creation of the sorts of episodes I do, where I can most directly talk with you, the listener. I call it the Dalton's Rangers because they were George Washington's spies during the Revolutionary War. Go to patreon.com/unplugged and you can join at three levels. Join at the Scout level, you'll get early access to all new episodes and completely ad-free episodes, and I have about 500 by now. Join at the Intelligence Officer level, you get all the same stuff as level one, and you also get premium episodes. I'm doing a series on the life of Audie Murphy, on Americans who fought in World War I for the French Foreign Legion, and another series on Teddy Roosevelt's adventures in the Dakota Badlands. About 50 or so of these episodes now. Finally, if you join at the Spy Master level, you get all the things from the first two tiers. You get a shout out to you and or your business at the end of each episode. You get three hardcover books, and you can ask me a question on absolutely anything in history, and I will devote an entire episode to answering it. So check out all those bonuses by going to patreon.com/unplugged. Wonderful listeners, that is all for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and see you next time.